Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there, welcome to The Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio. I am your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, and I am here to help you stop counting calories, carbs, and fat grams so you can easily get to a healthy weight and get on with your life. How amazing to wake up and think about your day, not your diet. That's the plan. If you'd like to join me today, the number here is 818-602-4929. 818-602-4929. I would love to hear what is on your mind, what is weighing on you, because the real problem with binge eating, stress eating, or compulsive eating, any kind of eating issue that you don't like, is not food. Food is not the problem. Food is actually the solution to the problem. The real problem is what's eating at you. So I want to start with a question from Maria in LA. And she says, I came home from the market with Halloween candy for trick-or-treaters. And my husband told me not to eat any. He says he's just looking out for my health. He does this all the time and it really bothers me. What can I say to make him back off? It's getting so that I don't want to eat in front of him. Maria, this is a great question. And basically what you're describing is a husband who's the food police. Anyone who feels the need to comment on what you are eating, it's not just criticism. It's food policing. And sometimes it doesn't even sound like criticism. Sometimes it sounds like jealousy. So in an article on Refinery 29 called How to Respond When Someone Judges Your Food Choices, the author Corey Steig breaks it down. She says some food police sound more jealous than critical. They say things like, oh, I wish I could eat something like that instead of my salad. Or other times they're straight up rude, like fries again? Oh, you're so bad. You're being so bad. But most of the time, the comments from the peanut gallery are just annoying and borderline offensive. Obviously, sharing a meal is a very social experience, but sometimes it can feel like whoever you're with at that meal is judging you for every bite that goes into your mouth. And that can take all the joy and enjoyment out of eating. So what to do? So here, Maria, here's how I recommend you talk to your husband. Use what I call the SET, SET, SET approach. S for situation, E for emotion, T for translation. So it would go something along the lines of, when you talk about what I'm eating, or when you tell me I shouldn't eat Halloween candy, that's the situation, I feel angry, hurt, frustrated, pissed off, upset. You know, whatever the emotion is, that's the emotion, E for emotion, because it means. And this is the hardest part. This is T for translation. What does it mean? What does it mean to you that your husband is commenting on Halloween candy, or presumably, I think, you know, she mentions he does it all the time, always talks about what she's eating. So that could be, it means you're trying to control me. It means you don't accept me. It means you're not unconditionally supportive. It means whatever it means, that's the T. And by the way, this is a great way of communicating about anything. Anyone that you have any kind of a conflict with, you can use this. Your situation, this is what's going on. This is how it makes me feel. This is what it means to me. So practice makes progress. If you have any questions about that, Maria, or anyone else, shoot me a question on Facebook, where I am also looking. If you have any questions, just write me a message and I'll answer it, hopefully, on the air. Okay, here's another article that, Maria, I think is important for you to hear and for other people out there who can relate to what you're going through, because I hear this all the time. People are like, everyone around me, whether it's my mom or my dad or my, you know, brother or my sister or my husband or my wife or whatever, my friends, they're always on me about what I'm eating. They're always mentioning like what I should eat, what I shouldn't eat. It's really annoying. Well, sometimes it's more than annoying. So this article is called "The Symptom of Abuse Nobody Talks About" by Catherine Lindsay. So she writes about an episode of a podcast by Dan Savage called Savage Lovecast. And one listener called in to report a very specific problem with her boyfriend. Maria, and anyone else who's been food policed, you're going to understand this one. She said, things are good, but one thing is he constantly monitors what I eat. He constantly monitors what I eat, the caller begins. And she goes on to detail some habits that are a bit concerning. For example, the caller describes herself as a healthy, active person, but her boyfriend frequently orders for her at restaurants. What the hell? And why the hell am I getting calls on my phone when I have Do Not Disturb on? That is interrupting my Facebook Live. Anyone who's trying to call my cell phone, please don't. I have Do Not Disturb on, but it is not working. Okay, her boyfriend orders for her at restaurants. What the heck? Reminds her of things she's eaten that day already. What the heck? And tells her to slow down or be careful if she's eating a big meal. He'll even go so far as to take the food away from her and either eat it himself or throw it away. I'm just saying it because I care about your health, the boyfriend claims. Similar to what Maria's husband said to her, Savage's take on the situation, quote, he is a monstrous piece of shit. That is what Dan Savage says about this boyfriend. This is not the end of the ways he is going to control, undermine, and gaslight you, Savage warns. This is the first front in his long war against your agency. Well, this caller is not the first person to come head-to-head with the issue of food control in a relationship. Some people have taken to Reddit to express similar problems. One post says, it all started a few months ago when we were grocery shopping together. And then she goes on to detail her boyfriend's switch from health advocate to full-on obsessive. He would make the same meals, make them eat the same meals all the time, admonish his girlfriend for getting a snack, remove and throw away food she was eating if it didn't fit his standards. I don't believe any of this is malicious on his end. Another post reads, he doesn't obsess about anyone's diet besides ours, so I'm inclined to believe that he does all of this because he truly cares about my well-being. So is it caring? Is it caring? Does it sound like caring? I don't know. That's not how I express caring. Do you? Is it caring, or is it something in the arena of potentially abusive? So according to Kamika Crawford from the National Domestic Violence Hotline, it's really important to look at the larger pattern of behavior in the relationship that your partner is exhibiting. Domestic violence is a big umbrella that covers a variety of abuse, physical, verbal, emotional, sexual, financial, and even the food police. So abuse is a repetitive pattern of behaviors to maintain power and control over an intimate partner. And some red flags are jealousy of friends and family, isolating you from them, controlling your finances, as well as, here where it pertains to us, making demeaning comments, shaming you, or pressuring you into doing something you don't want to do. Food control is not necessarily a warning sign of full-on abuse, but it could be a symptom. So if you think it's a problem, if it is a problem for you, if you're uncomfortable, then guess what? It is a problem. Whatever someone else thinks. So if you're comfortable approaching your partner and you don't think this is part of a larger abuse issue, Maria, or anyone else who can relate to Maria, and I will hold that because I've got Nicole calling. Hello, Nicole.
Hi, good morning, Dr. Nina. How are you?
I'm fine. There's a very loud sound in the... Oh, no, it's gone. Oh, it's there.
Oh, is it gone?
No, there's a sound in the background. It comes in and out. But I can hear you.
Did I call back?
No, I can hear you now. Yeah, this is good.
Okay.
What's up? Okay. What's up, Nicole?
The first thing is I feel like I'm making some sort of progress. So I just want to express that and share that. I just feel like, I don't know, the other night I went to a restaurant and I ordered like a spaghetti with shrimp, and like I ate it and I enjoyed it, and yeah, I felt full after, but I was like satisfied, and I didn't end up.
You know why you're getting the applause? You know why you're getting the applause? Because you're right. What? That is progress. That is progress.
Yeah, you think I'm making progress too?
I think you're making progress. Yes. Yes.
Okay, cool. It's kind of really cool, actually.
It's liberating.
It's really, really cool.
It's liberating, right?
What? You can Yeah.
So good for you.
I went to the smoothie bar. I, like, got a smoothie. Like, when would I ever, like, feel okay having a smoothie? I'd, like, probably feel guilty and then, like, eat a million bad things after because I felt so guilty about eating the smoothie that was caloric and had a lot of carbs, but I got this smoothie. It was nutritious. It had berries. It had almond milk. It had half a banana. I told them to do half a banana. It had some protein powder. And, like, it was really satisfying, and I enjoyed it, and I drank it slowly, and it was, like, awesome.
And you didn't feel guilty, and you actually got to enjoy the smoothie instead of being racked with guilt and then say, oh, my God, I ate the smoothie. Now I might as well eat cake or whatever.
Yeah.
Yes. Good for you.
Yeah.
Good.
Okay. I feel like I'm making baby steps.
You are indeed.
I did want to ask a question. So that's my progress, but I'm still struggling in some areas. So last night, went out and, ordered a glass of wine, a minestrone soup, and then a spaghetti. And I wasn't hungry. And then I took the rest to go. And then I know there was something eating at me because I dropped somebody off and I was like,
Nicole, you're going in and out. So we're not getting everything that you're saying. I heard that you know there's something eating at you.
Yeah, something was eating at me, and I was dropping off somebody, and I kind of knew that I was like, saying, I need to break up with this person. And that was eating at me, and then I thought about the pasta in the back, and he said something to me like, oh, like pasta. And then I don't know. Oh. And I was not hungry. I was so satisfied.
Nicole, I'm sorry.
I had the soup.
Nicole,
can you hear me, Dr. Nina?
No, I didn't hear what you said.
Okay.
So you dropped off someone, and then someone, was it your Lyft driver or Uber driver, or someone looked at your food and said pasta? I missed that. We missed that.
Okay, sorry. So let me just see. Okay, so I'll call you back. I'll call you back.
Okay.
Okay.
Oh, technology. When it works great. When it doesn't work, it really doesn't work. It's really annoying. So let's see hope that she calls back and we can actually hear her, because I think where she's going with this is someone made a comment, a snarky comment. And I by the way, have a bunch of answers to snarky comments. Okay, so, which we'll get to later. All right, while we're waiting for Nicole to call back, I just want to say that if you're comfortable communicating with your partner about being the food police, or communicating with anyone who is food policing you, then really talk to them. Use the SET approach, and remember that one of the signs of a healthy relationship with whomever is being able to communicate. So if you're have a conversation about how this makes you feel, and really let them know that this is not something that you're taking as helpful. You're not like, oh, you're looking out for my health. This is so nice. No, it feels humiliating. It's shaming. It's awful. And cut it out. Okay, so let's talk more about food shamers. Hopefully Nicole will call back. She might have, her question might actually pertain exactly to what I'm about to talk about. So how about some other comebacks to use with food shamers? Here's an article on Health Magazine called 5 Kinds of Food Shamers You Will Encounter and How to Deal, written by Lisa Lombardi. She says, if you've ever had anyone walk into your cubicle as you were inhaling a quarter pounder with cheese and say, I didn't know anyone ate fast food anymore. Congrats, you've been food shamed. or anything like that. I think if you've been food shamed, you don't really need like a heads up that it's happening. If you've been food shamed, you pretty much know what's happening. Here she is. Hi, Nicole.
Hi.
Oh, it's... I'm sorry. I can't hear you at all.
Can you hear me now? At all?
You're now like, I can. Now I can.
Okay. Okay. So my question is not about food shaming, actually.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I knew something was eating at me, and then he got out of the car, and he said to me, enjoy your pasta. And so then it reminded me that I had pasta. And I knew that it was eating at me that I have to break up with this guy, and I really don't want to because he's so sweet and kind and nice, but I don't see a life with him long term. So it's like I'm eating at me, and then he reminded me of the pasta, so I went for the pasta. But I was so like already satisfied and full, and didn't really want to eat the rest of the pasta.
Nicole, it's not about pasta. It could have been anything. It could have been fried chicken. It could have been anything. So. What it sounds like it's about is that it diverted your attention. So instead of thinking, oh my gosh, I feel so bad. I've got to break up with this nice guy. He's really nice. I don't want to hurt his feelings, but I'm not feeling it. Instead of feeling, you know, all the yuck that goes with that, we've all been there, right? Oh, it's so hard.
Yeah.
It's so hard. Instead of feeling the yucky bad feeling about knowing that you've got to hurt somebody else, you focus on, oh my gosh, look at what I ate. I wasn't hungry. Why did I eat that? Blah, 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 blah. Right? So it's a diversion. Yeah. It's a distraction from something that is uncomfortable.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's also more fun to eat a delicious seafood pasta than think about, oh, holy shit, how am I going to do this?
Yeah.
I tried not to do the I feel so guilty about the eating the pasta thing after I ate it. I tried to just, like, move on with my night.
Okay.
But...
That's good.
Yeah, but I totally can see how I wanted to, like, eat the pasta and, like, be in a moment of enjoyment rather than think about it was a distraction. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So what should I do next time I'm in that situation? Rally?
Well, I think you need to pay attention to think about this. If you're turning to food, you are turning away from something else. So you ask yourself, what am I turning away from? What is it I don't want to think about? What is it I don't want to feel? What is it that I don't want to be on my mind or in my heart? You know, what am I turning away from? And I think you probably had a very good idea that what you were turning away from was having to break up with this nice guy.
Yeah. Okay.
And then
that's
you encourage
really
yourself.
You.
What would you say to a friend who had to break? And then you encourage yourself. What would you say to a friend who had to break up with a really nice guy, like great guy, but just it's just not you're just not feeling it.
I would say to her that I know it's really hard and I know he's really nice, but breaking up with him is going to get you closer to the person that you do want to be with. So as hard as it is, just like write him a nice message, be really kind and loving, tell him everything you like about him and that you really enjoy getting to know him. And that's going to open a space for the right person to come into your life.
So beautiful.
You can do it.
Beautiful. Perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Okay.
So what you just said is exactly what you say to yourself. Gotta talk. What happens is you get upset and then you abandon yourself by distracting yourself. Turning to food is self-abandonment. Yeah. But when you stay with yourself, you actually know what to say. If you think about what you'd say to a friend, boom, you didn't even hesitate. It just... You know, just came out.
Yeah.
So imagine.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah. So you got to be that friend to yourself as well.
Yeah. And then I worry, like, what if I'm making a mistake? What if but I'm not. Just go with your gut. Okay.
And the what if, the what if is fear, and stay with what is, right? The antidote to what is, which is fear about the future, is reality, what is, which is what you know to be true in the present. So what do you know to be true?
Okay.
Yes, he is a nice guy. Yes, he's this. He has all these good qualities. But you're just not feeling it.
Yeah.
And that's not going to change.
Okay, and then what's it called? By the way, thank you so much. That was so, so helpful. Like, you just get it. You always just get it. But I saw that you posted something in your group, Food for Thought, that you were going to talk about it today, and it resonated. So I'm really, what was it that you posted?
Yes. So I posted a question: at what point in your day does food become a problem?
Oh.
And then a lot of people answered, and I was going to, after I talk about the food shamers, I'm going to talk about. Answer the question. How would you answer that question? Or is there a time of day where food becomes a problem?
I was going to say it really resonated because in the past I do feel like food became a problem at a certain time of day. But I feel like with all the work I've been doing and you helping me and everything, I just feel like there isn't a specific time. Like I would before want to say, late at night or maybe when I was at the accounting firm, maybe a lot of people were writing 2 or 3 or 3 or 4 when you need that pick me up or whatever. But I don't feel that anymore. I listen to my body when I'm intuitively hungry and I think about what do I want to eat? What's going to nourish me right now? What do I feel like? And I'm trying to be more aware and just listening to my body and
Nicole. I am so sorry.
No,
I just,
what you got, Nick?
Wait,
you got
I
Nick
got. Okay,
call.
Hold on, Nick. First of all, great to hear from you. Nicole. I am so sorry. I just inadvertently cut you off. However, I got what you had to say, and I am going to go through the answers later on. Later, first, I'm going to talk to Nick. So I am so sorry. I so rudely cut you off. That was just how did I do that? I cut you off, but I got Nick. Hello, Nick. It's been a long time. It's great to hear from you.
I know. I got a new phone. It's been crazy, and I can't get a hold of you for some reason. So I was just leaving a message on your other phone saying that I tried to get a hold of you again this week, but I couldn't, and you picked up the phone.
Oh, well, here, yes, welcome. Welcome back.
I just want to tell you a couple of things that I mentioned to you once before. And kind of good news. I had a couple of things that were bothering me and that I wanted to handle it because it was bothering me. Two issues. One of them was I had to take these exercise courses for me to get myself better, back on track. And I started going to see this one particular person. And I went there. And I was really, ignored by it. I was, ignored from the person because I was supposed to see a physical therapy, and my physical therapy was being seen by other people, and I was being ignored. And then, there was, 15 minutes left, and she says, or do a couple things, and she just did a couple things and said, well, I'll see you later. And I sat there for 15 minutes, and she didn't come back. And I was really irritated that this isn't the way it's supposed to be. I'm paying for this. I really need to get my legs back in shape. And I, this is not fair. So I walked out and I was going to say something at the desk to her, but I figured, well, it wouldn't be right to say something to her in front of her other employees that work with her and so on. I didn't want to put her on the spot.
Okay.
So I waited till my next class or next appointment, and I called at 8 in the morning, and she happened to be there, and I mentioned to her how it really bothered me that you ignored me and that I didn't get the full class that I needed to get better, and I really was very good about it.
I
was very nice to her, and I was just saying that, and then the key thing I said to her, I said, I think I might have to call my insurance company and get another company to go see because I'm not happy over there. Well, once I had to say something like that, that was like, woof.
Suddenly she's your best friend.
My best girlfriend, I mean, I went there and she did the job she was supposed to do. I mean, it was almost human. So as I was walking out, she was walking out. She opened the door for me to walk out the door.
Well, Nick,
so I kind of got a kick out of that.
It sounds
but
like you... You spoke up instead of this was eating at you, and instead of just sort of turning to ice cream or talking about the scale or focusing on something else that you could get mad at yourself for, you communicated with her, you told her the problem, and she was receptive and you got what you needed. That is wonderful.
Yeah. And one other turn I want to say, because this is important. As you know, about a month and a half ago, I lost my best friend. He had passed away, and he lived in Atlanta. And I think about him all the time. And I talk to his wife not that often, but I called her on his birthday, which was Monday. And she was very happy to hear from me. And we were talking, and she's talking about her moving and just things that are going on. And it's really difficult for her. And I wanted to call her because I wanted to ask her if she would mind giving me something that was, I don't know, that was personal, that he really liked, and that I could keep, that I could really feel close to and know from him, too, because we would kid about it. So I said to him, she said, what would you like? I said, well, we always made jokes about his watches and things like that. He always had beautiful watches here and there. And she said to me, you know, he had beautiful watches, but a lot of them he did. We did a lot of traveling, and we were really bought watches, you know, in China or this or that. And I said, you know, Judy, it doesn't even matter. It's just the point that it was his that I would really get a kick out of it. And she was so happy to hear from me to say that, and said, well, I'm still going through all the things, and I'll get it to you soon. I said, well, whatever, whenever you have a chance. And she says, I will definitely do that for you. I'm glad I can do that for you. And I felt so much better being, you know, I was afraid to ask for something, you know, but I said, what the hell, I'm going to ask because I really do want it. You know, it really is something I can think about him all the time because I think about him all the time anyways. And she was just so lovely. I mean, she couldn't have been more perfect. So these two things happened this week that I just really feel good about. That I, you know, I
you
just,
need this. You know, you
great
need this
experiences
too.
Of stepping out and doing something and getting them done that I wanted.
Here's what I have to say. That's the big crowd. That's the big crowd. That's the big stadium crowd applause. Yes, because what you're telling us is that you are speaking up for yourself, which you had a hard time doing in the past. You're a longtime caller, even though it's been a while. Those of you who've been listening to the show know that, you know, this is something, Nick, you've struggled with. And asking for what you want. When you are a kid and you are shamed for wanting, a lot of people say, oh, I don't want that. I just need that. Do I need it or do I want it? As if somehow it's greedy to want something and you're going to get shamed. And you should only need something. That is the only way that you can legitimately wish for something, to need it. Well, you allowed yourself to want it, and one could say emotionally you did need it. You allowed yourself to want it and ask for it and bypass that shame, that potential shame of oh, you asked for something, you want something. You did it, and you got such a lovely response, and now you'll be able to have something not only to remind you of him, but something you can wear on a daily basis, a watch.
Yeah.
So you created that.
It'll be fun.
That's wonderful. I am so happy for you, and I'm so happy to hear that you are, like, I can even hear in your voice. Your voice sounds
And apologize to Nicole for me.
Oh no, it's fine. It's not you. It's me. I owe her an apology.
Okay.
I owe her an apology. I cut her off. But even your voice. There's more life in your voice, and I can hear it.
Yeah.
And it's a beautiful
thing.
Thank you. You're welcome.
See you later.
Okay.
All right.
Bye,
bye,
Nick.
Bye.
And Nick, one more thing. Maybe next thing to work on is learn to take a compliment. Oh, he's gone. Learn to take a compliment. Take it in. Take a compliment. All right. I'm going to come back to the five kinds of food shamers that you will encounter and how to deal. And I'm going to just talk about the question I asked in my Facebook group. And by the way, if you are not a member of my Facebook group, it is called Dr. Nina's Food for Thought Community. And you can head over and join. You just have to answer a few questions. And And then you can be part of the community. So I asked, at what point in your day does food become a problem? So one person said, definitely around 3 o'clock. That's when she would come home to an empty house after school and would want to overeat to de-stress, and maybe more than de-stress. Maybe there's something about that emptiness that created a sense of a void, right? And we can feel emptiness and loneliness as almost a physical void. And that's why sometimes we use food to symbolically fill that void, especially if you're eating kind of more bulky foods, pasta, bread, muffins, cake, pizza, things like that. That is often associated with filling a void when you are eating it to change the way you feel emotionally. She also says 3 o'clock is also when she'd come home from school after a day of basically starving herself, and then she'd be, you know, ragingly hungry. Two reasons why people binge. One is to resolve something emotional. You're turning to food to turn away from something else, and that could be emotional, it could be distraction, numbing, so many things. The other reason is when you don't eat enough and you're so hungry that you can't find full, as one of my patients says. He says, I can't find full. Because if you get that, you know, as she puts it, ragingly hungry, then you're going to binge. It's just, it's a physiological thing. And that's why it's really important to eat during the day and have regular meals and not starve yourself and get to the point where you are, you know, just, yeah, I think that's a perfect way to put it, ragingly hungry. She also says, when I take care of myself and ensure I eat nourishing meals, it's not a problem. Food is not a problem. Love it. Someone else says 2 to 3 o'clock when I need a pick-me-up to get me through the rest of the day. I also think I'm bored. So boredom is kind of an umbrella emotion which can cover up other feelings. So for example, so boredom is about wanting to do something. If you're bored, the way to alleviate boredom is to do something, to do an activity, to be active, to be productive. Of course, this is not good if being overly active and working all the time and being too productive, all about being a human doing, if that keeps you from connecting to your thoughts and feelings, that's not good. Sometimes loneliness is construed as boredom. So we want to check in on, you know, are you bored or are you lonely? Even in a group of people, even at work, even in a stadium full of people, you can feel lonely. A sense of being disconnected. So the key to resolving loneliness is to really connect, not just be in the presence of someone, but really connect with another person. Emptiness is about disconnecting from yourself. Disconnecting from yourself and from what you are experiencing inside. So sometimes people feel bored when they're really lonely or they're feeling cut off from themselves. And so this can even manifest as get this, guys, this is such an interesting food, mind-body connection, that when you are yearning for something, when you are hungry for something, when you want something, any feeling of yearning can actually manifest as physical hunger. Sometimes this happens when people are hungry all the time. Like, I'm hungry all the time. I don't know why I'm hungry all the time. Can't get full. Eat something, I'm hungry like an hour later. Well, assuming they don't have some kind of endocrine issue, maybe it's psychological. Maybe the experience of wanting and yearning and being hungry for something or hungry for someone is getting experienced as physical hunger. Very important to look at that. Someone else said, sometimes when I feel stressed or when I'm away from my mom because I feel free from the food cop that she has been in my life. That person needs to definitely keep listening because I'm going to talk about the, you know, how to deal with food shamers. So this is what I call the I can't wait for everyone to go upstairs and leave the kitchen because then I can eat whatever I want kind of a feeling. That if you always feel like you've got eyes on you and everyone's looking at you and what are you going to eat, when you have the freedom to eat something, you're going to overeat it as she is. And also feeling stressed, the way to alleviate stress is with words, not with food. If a friend of yours is stressed, I doubt very much you're going to say, oh, you're stressed. Okay, I totally know what to do. Eat this. You're going to be so much better. I mean, maybe you do, maybe you don't, but hopefully not. When someone is stressed, what do you say? You say, what's going on? Why are you stressed? Let's look at that stress. Let's alleviate that stress. Talk to me. So you've got to validate what you're feeling. What is the source of the stress? Acknowledge it. Reassure yourself. Someone else says, when she comes back from school between 12 and 4, she is a student. She's a mom of two kids, and she has chocolate after lunch, and she goes overboard with that. Chocolate feels like the cherry that goes on top of the cake that makes that quiet time so much better. Okay, so what she's saying is this is her only me time. She's taking care of twins. She's going to school. You know, she's got a whole family thing going on. She's got to study. She's got to do all kinds of stuff. So her only me time is when she is eating. And chocolate is sweetness, right? So maybe she needs more sweetness in her life, not with respect to other people, more fun in her life just for herself. Because if we don't get enough sweetness in our life, food is going to serve that purpose. We're going to get symbolic sweetness with food. If we don't get enough fun in our lives, we're going to use food for fun. If she's connecting chocolate with quiet me time, then she needs to separate that. Can she have quiet time without the chocolate? It's sort of become a Pavlovian response. So that is my answer to that. If you guys have any answers to this question of at what point in your day does food become a problem, just shoot me a message on my page and I will answer it when I see it, if I see it, hopefully soon. Okay, Alan, thank you for the compliment. Okay, five kinds of food shamers you will encounter and how to deal. Once foods are called good and bad, then the people who are doing the eating are judged good and bad as well. This is from Pamela Peek, MD, author of The Hunger Fix. She says, don't let food bullies get under your skin. People who are made to feel embarrassed about their guilty pleasures are less likely to make future healthy choices, according to a 2015 study in the journal Appetite. That is true. I mean, how often has someone said, do you think you should eat that chocolate? And the person says, oh my gosh, why, let me think about it. No, I actually shouldn't eat this chocolate. I don't think I should eat this chocolate. Thank you for enlightening me. No, I will not have chocolate anymore because it's not healthy. Yet that's never happened and will never happen because that's not how it works. Instead, you feel shame, you feel humiliation, which makes you want to have even more chocolate or whatever it is. Okay. So Lisa Lombardi, author of this article, says, fight back with this field guide to the biggest judgy Jennies out there and how to hang on to your dignity and your more evolved than theirs approach to healthy eating. Okay, so here are the five kinds of food shamers. Number one, the passive-aggressive metabolism praiser. You're so lucky you can eat all that. On the surface, this person is praising your superhuman metabolism and digestive tract. So why do their words make you feel all queasy inside? Because she's getting her jab in, implying that you suck down food like you're going for the gold at the Coney Island hot dog eating contest. Just remember, though, it is not about you. It's about them. That's right. It's about them. People tend to declare more negative comments and judges when they themselves feel less grounded in their own eating behavior, says Dr. Peek. There are mixed emotions involved. Envy that perhaps a more slender person can get away with it. Terror and fear that the judging person will fall to temptation if overeating is going on around them. Your best bet, don't engage. Simply smile with grace and change the subject. Number two, the food fascist. You can't eat a tuna melt in this office. That is what a health senior editor was told at a fashion industry job she once had. It was orders of the boss lady. No faux flattery here. These people are straight up with their efforts to control what everyone else consumes. Take the family member who says, I don't permit sweets in my house when you come bearing a bakery box. Or the diet trend-hopping friends who announces, I can't have any gluten at my table. Evidently suffering from the only known case of sudden sight-induced penny intolerance. This kind of rigidity, though, sets people up for disordered eating. That's right, because as I have said a lot, probably every single episode of this show, the anticipation of deprivation only makes you want something more. If you think you are not going to be able to have something, then you are going to want it more. And then you're going to have it more. I better have it now because I'm not going to be able to have it until I lose X many pounds. So why not be conveniently busy, she says, the next time a dinner out invite comes from your super obsessive friends. Number three, the snack obituary writer. Whoa, I didn't know they still make double stuffed Oreos. In a golly gee tone, this trickster feigns shock that your occasional treats are actually on store shelves in America in the 21st century. Really? If they find you eating a donut, it's like you were caught smoking opium and must have some overseas connection to secure your illicit goods. Hold your head high and enjoy your occasional ring ding. Dr. Peake recommends following a reasonable 80-20 rule. Nourish yourself with delicious whole foods 80% of the time and leave room for treats 20% of the time. This way you have breathing room to just be human. Okay, so we know that is easier said than done. Absolutely. This is what happens when you're not using food to resolve an emotional issue, but it's something to aim for. And it gives you permission to have, like Nicole said, that pasta with spaghetti or to have that smoothie without feeling guilty or the double stuffed Oreos or whatever, because you can't have a perfect diet. In fact, that's not even, there is no perfect. So if you want to have some cookies, have some freaking cookies, because otherwise, you know what's going to happen in the long run? You're going to have fake cookies, or you're going to eat watercress or something, and eventually you're going to have the cookie, and then you're going to feel like, well, I had the cookie, I might as well have 12. And then you know how that goes. We don't want that happening. All right, next is the mean minimalist. You're eating Chipotle. They present as fact your lunch choice. It's as if there's no need for commentary. The simple statement about what is on your plate is damning enough. One health.com editor was subjected to this understated put down at a previous job. I felt shamed of my choices and I never got it again for lunch. You're eating Chipotle. But how is it their business? They don't know what I eat at home. If you're always having to defend your Taco Tuesday, limit your time together because it's just plain too toxic to hang out with people like that. Last is the salad shamer. Look at you with your teeny kale salad again. This is the reverse food diss, in which you feel criticized for happening to like green juice, salmon over greens, and the quinoa bowl. The implication is you're showing off or trying to make friends and colleagues feel bad about their lunches. Nobody should feel self-conscious breaking out their lentil tofu bake, so why the snide comments? When someone is the outlier and practicing a healthy lifestyle choice, it will make people who are not uncomfortable. So smile and say, I'm feeling great and enjoying my meal. I hope the same for you. Just try not to say it through a snarl. So those are the five types of food shamers. Which one are you to yourself? That's another question. What do you tell yourself? You're probably not saying, oh, you're so lucky you can eat all that. Probably not that one. I'm guessing you might be a food fascist to yourself. Does that resonate with yourself? Do you tell yourself, I can't eat that. That's not allowed for me. Other people can eat that, but not me. Are you a mean minimalist? Do you tell yourself, this is what you're eating, and that's it? No. Those are probably the two that resonate most for how you food shame yourself, because that's also not good. Okay, moving on. Now let's talk about body shaming. I can't find the actual question. I wrote it down. It's somewhere in my papers. But someone wrote in and told me that she's constantly getting those kind of snide remarks, constantly getting body shamed. She said she's worked really hard to come to accept her body. She's never going to be a size, you know, 2 or 4, but she's come to accept her curves and like her body and enjoy her body. It has been a war of decades. She's finally there, and other people are constantly making comments. And what does she say back to them? So again, I have some of my own ideas on that, but I wanted to share with you another article because they've got some really good ones, better than I can come up with on the fly. Here are 21 clapbacks real people used in response to body shaming. Let's start with this one. Someone said, "If anyone wants to say I'm fat, I just tell them that there's too much of me for their small minds to handle and their cold hearts to love." Okay, so here are some more highlights from these 21 clapbacks. This retort to someone who has opinions on your food choices. So the writer says, "As any red-blooded American woman might do, I entered the sandwich line purely because the special was a buffalo chicken wrap. Me: hello, I'd like a buffalo chicken wrap with shredded cheddar cheese, please. Woman next to me in line, looking at my not washboard stomach: ugh, if you're eating that, you've got to be pregnant. OMG. Me: not pregnant. No, I just like cheese, but if you must lead a joyless life if you think adding cheese to a wrap is a wild pregnancy craving. So there." Here's another one. The writer says, "After a night out in college, I was with my friend at the local McDonald's. I don't know why, but I was holding my double cheeseburger in my hand while filling up my drink cup when suddenly this drunk frat boy comes up to us and said, 'Are you sure you should be eating that?' And I look over at my friend. We're both curvy, and she looked like she was about to cry. So I turned around, looked the guy in the eye, and shoved the entire double cheeseburger into my mouth. He looked so confused, and then he ended up walking away with his mouth hanging open while my friend and I laughed at him." Here's an efficient shutdown of a mother-in-law's judgment. The writer says, "My fiancé's mother told me she was concerned that because of my weight, her son would have to become my carer in a few years because I'd be too fat to function. I told her calmly that I was perfectly healthy. I had low blood pressure, low cholesterol levels, and I exercised regularly. She said, 'But doesn't it bother you how you look aesthetically?' I actually happen to like the way I look, and my fiancé has made me feel more beautiful than I've ever felt before. So I looked her in the eye," said the writer, "and I said, 'I like my body, and your son seems to enjoy it a lot, too.'" Shut down! I wish I could have been a fly on the wall in that one. Okay, this explanation of how little other people's opinions of your body matter. How are we doing on time? Oh, I have just enough time, really, really quickly. Several years ago, the writer says, "I mentioned to a now former friend that I'd gained some weight and was trying to drop a few pounds because I wasn't very comfortable. For whatever reason, his response was, 'Well, men don't like women that are too thin.' My response: I do not give a shit about what men think about my body. I don't care about what women think about my body. My body is not for other people, and the only person whose opinion matters about how I look is mine." He rather wisely decided to change the subject. Nice, huh? Love it, love it, love it. Okay, so that is it for today. Thank you so much for joining me here on LA Talk Radio. You can listen live. Those of you who are listening live on Facebook, you can listen live on Facebook and on LA Talk Radio every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Or you can listen later at Apple Podcasts or anywhere you get podcasts. Just look for The Dr. Nina Show on LA Talk Radio. And also, if you want a free copy of my new book, The Binge Cure, 7 Steps to Outsmart Emotional Eating, you can still get it. There are limited copies, but you can grab yours at drnina.info. That's drnina.info. Get it now, because I did order a few more for people because I want to have as many people to get it as possible, but there are limits, so I hope that you grab it now. All you have to do is pay for shipping. Thank you so much, and I'll see you next week. Bye for now.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.